Good evening, everybody. I have brought a celebrity. My wife Janet hasn't normally come because of all the stuff that we've had going on. Yes, that's right. Round of applause. But we are now empty nesters, so we have no excuses. And we really just eat popcorn for dinner, you know, because that's what you do when the kids are gone. You don't have to make anything special for anybody, right? You just kind of eat when you want and come home when you want. But we still talk to each other, so it's not like we're passing in the nights. You know, it's interesting. My parents died a little while ago. My dad while I was in college and my mom about 10 years ago. But it's interesting how I wish I could go back and ask them a couple questions. One of the questions I'd love to ask them is, Mom, Dad, were you ever worried about me as a kid? Especially as it related to school. Because when I went to kindergarten, I showed up in kindergarten, I walked into the class, and there was just a little bit of fear about this whole thing, and I said, you know what, I'm not doing this. And I walked all the way home because didn't want anything to do with kindergarten, didn't know the teacher, didn't know the people, so just walking home. There's a woman from our neighborhood, Mrs. Morris. She saw me, knew me, saw me on the street going, this kid should be in school. So she pulls over, try to ask me to go, can I give you a ride back to school or home? I don't know who this person is. I don't remember her. To me, she's stranger danger. So I'm like, get back, you know? And so as I kind of bumped along, I was just like, Mom, did you worry? Because every time they'd go to a parent-teacher conference, and our kids saw this because our kids actually saw my old report cards, and they'd look at the report cards, and what was written on the report card was what they actually said to my mom and dad. They'd usually start a sentence about me like this. You know, Ben shows a lot of potential, but blah, 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 blah. They're like going, gosh, Dad, were you just like this crazy kid? Well, Mrs. Devening gave me my own desk. Because she said, maybe if I put the kid in the far back of the room with his own desk away from everybody, he won't bother anyone. I had to sit up right up front next to Mr. Whalen in seventh grade, and if I got out of line, he had a paddle. And that's back when you could do those kinds of things. He was smart enough to give me 5 minutes at the end of the week to just kind of do a little comedy routine. Mr. McGrady, I sat right in front of his desk, and he'd always have an eye on me because he just knew I was a little bit different. Just a little crazy. And I just wondered what kind of worries my mom would have about me going to school. Well, fast forward, Janet and I are working with a couple right now, kind of doing some parent coaching. They have twins who are in first grade, and then I think 3-year-old and a 2-year-old, something almost two. And as we've talked about them, they're going to the public school, and they are filled with worries. They are really concerned about what their kids are going to be exposed to. The mom, at times, is a little beside herself. She just has these worries about school shootings, about how randomly one of her kids is going to be killed. She has these fears and worries about these kids getting indoctrination with all kinds of stuff that's being kind of put out in the public schools today. Matter of fact, they wanted to sit in on one of the health conversations with their kids, and in the conversation with, this was kindergartners at the time, they were trying to talk about some health-related things with kindergartens. And so the parents are a little concerned, a little worried about what their kids might hear. And for the most part, they didn't say too much, but they did drop this idea to a kindergartner. And they said, you know, most boys have penises and most girls have vaginas, leaving the door open for all kinds of things. And so their fears are just escalating. Their worries are escalating. And as they look at their children and they look at their kids' future, they have a lot of worries. And you know, it's interesting, just as what was mentioned earlier, there's a lot going on in our world that we could be concerned about. Matter of fact, I'm curious if anybody has a worry. Is there anything in your head that you're a little bit worried about? Anybody? I know I have some. You know, I think all of us, there's something as we look at our lives, as we look what's in the future, we get a little concerned. We get a little worried about that. So I want us to unpack this very simple, very profound, very difficult to apply verse that Jesus gave us in Matthew chapter 6, verse 34. What I want to do is take a quick look at the verse and then try to ask ourselves three questions to try to flesh out a little bit how we can think and apply this verse. Now, before I do that, I've had a little experience with worry. I think worry and anxiety is my spiritual gift. I just kind of was given a bigger dose than most people. Some of that makes sense. I grew up in an alcoholic home with 5 brothers and sisters, a very chaotic place. I kind of had a generalized anxiety that I didn't know when the belt was going to come out. I didn't know what kind of dad I would have. Didn't know where my mom would be. And I was the kind of guy that was a little overly responsible. I was kind of the white sheep of the family. So I was always trying to figure out how to fix this thing and bring peace and calm and order. And sometimes I was being silly and goofy. But what that did is it created in me a generalized real sense of anxiety about life. And I've just kind of carried that with me. Matter of fact, a few weeks ago, I was trying to think through how to help our daughter. She's got a car down in California, and she is driving out on her own. She's driving in Los Angeles. Can I underline the Los Angeles? Daughter driving in Los Angeles. And I wanted to put a backup camera on her car because her car didn't have one. So I thought, well, why don't I learn on my car here? Because it's the same car, and then when I go down, I'll put it on. So I'm watching all the YouTubes. I'm trying to do all this stuff. I'm kind of studying it. And I get started, and I touch the wrong thing because I'm trying to find out, you know, with the couple of probes, where's the lead I'm supposed to get at. And I touch the wrong thing, and now my car won't get out of park. So I immediately think, I broke my car. My car is broken. I've destroyed my transmission. This is Saturday. We got to leave on Wednesday. Because if I don't get this thing by Wednesday, then we're going to have to fly. And flying, we don't have the money for that because, you know, that's a lot of money when you don't book a flight that early. You know, we're talking about 5 days earlier, you know. So this is going to cost a lot of money. And if I take it to a dealership, man, they're way too much money. And I don't know how to diagnose this problem. I've broken my transmission. That's $4,000 on a trans. And my mind is just spinning with worry and anxiety about this. And I'm good at that. I really know how to do that. So that's why this verse has been a big part of my life. This passage, Matthew 6, has been a big part of my life. There's moments that I've gone out and just studied roses and said, those are beautiful, and God can take care of those. He can take care of me. And that's the heart of what Jesus is saying. Our verse, he says, therefore, do not worry about tomorrow, for tomorrow will worry about itself. Each day has enough trouble of its own. And there's five quick ideas from this verse that I want to highlight and then kind of ask these three questions. First of all, who's Jesus talking to? He's talking to all of his listeners around him at the time, and he's talking to us. This isn't a plural voice. Everybody's going to be in on this. So his message isn't just to the people who listened to him then. It's to us today as his followers. Well, what was his message? What's the action he tells them? He says, do not worry. That's the thing he wants us to understand. Do not worry. Two things I want us to understand from that. First of all, this is a command. It's a prohibition. The way it's formed in the Greek, it's really this idea that it's used to forbid in advance the initiation or occurrence of an action. In other words, it could be translated as don't ever worry, or don't start worrying, or simply do not worry, period. That's not who you should be. That's not what you should be about. And the concept of worry is used six times in this passage. We're at the end of Matthew 6, but from 25 through 34, it's used six different times. Jesus uses this six times to emphasize how he doesn't want us to do this behavior. And the meaning of the word worry is to be drawn in opposite directions. And the idea is that as you're pulling something in directions and you're starting to pull something, you can start to pull it apart into pieces. And Jesus says, I don't want you to be pulled apart in opposite directions to where you crumble in pieces. I'm doing some physical therapy right now. I brought my band. And what's interesting is I'm supposed to do these things for my shoulder, and they're supposed to be exercises where you're just trying to pull apart. And the farther you pull this thing apart, the harder it is to hold it. And the tension in the middle of this is pretty great. Why? Because I'm pulling in opposite directions. And Jesus is saying is you can't live in the present if you're trying to live in the future. And if you try to do both, this is what's going to happen. You're going to be pulled apart and stretched. And the tension that's here means you can't hold either one well at all. And the picture he's saying is don't be drawn in opposite directions. I don't want you to be involved with that because that brings anxiety, worry, fear. I can't hold on to this. I can't manage both of these things. So that's why you don't go to both of those places. It creates all kinds of problems for us, the kind of worrying and nervousness and unease. Well, what is it that we're worrying about? He says, this is for everybody. I don't want you to worry. He says, worry about what? It's about tomorrow. It's about all the stuff that's going to happen tomorrow. All the stuff that's in the future. I don't want you to worry about it. Because yes, there's a lot of troubles in tomorrow. But tomorrow is none of your business. I don't know if you remember in John 21 when Jesus is talking to Peter about the death that John will have or about his own death. Peter says, well, what about John? How's John going to die? What's going to happen to him? What are you going to do with him? What's his life? And Jesus says, hey, do not worry about him. That's none of your business. You follow me. And it's similar. He says, stay out of the future. That's none of your business. Your business is right here. And the last thing he does is he refocuses us. He refocuses us and says, this is where your focus should be. It's here. It's today. So that's a big idea. He wants every one of us to stop worrying, to not start worrying. He wants us to stay out of the future, stay in the present. Because, yes, there's troubles on both sides, so figure out the ones today. Don't worry about the other ones. God will help us with those. Well, what are some questions that came to my mind as I did this? First question that kind of came out is, why do we worry about the future? What is it about the future that I'm prone to worry about, that maybe you're prone to worry about? It's interesting, we worry about the future because there are things in life that can really hurt us. We are vulnerable human beings, aren't we? There's things that can take place in our own life, like our own health, that get us concerned. Right now, I'm praying for 6 people who have cancer. That makes me worry about me getting cancer. Now there's a 7th, actually, that I'm praying for. I'm worrying what's going on inside of me. I don't want to get a CT scan. I don't want to get any of that stuff. And the more I think about praying for them, the more I start getting worried and concerned about my own health, about things in my own body that aren't working. I imagine there's things on your bodies that aren't working. And we can get concerned about that, race to the future and worry about what's going to happen to me. And when we do that, we pull ourselves in these 2 different directions. We worry about that. We worry about our health because we're vulnerable human beings. We weren't designed to stay here. And our lives are deteriorating. Another part of worrying about the future for me is wealth, in the sense of, am I going to have enough when I retire? What's going to happen to me in that road? You know? Am I going to be living in a trailer? Am I going to be living in a van down by the river? You know? Maybe a cardboard box is going to start looking pretty good here, you know? What's interesting, we have 2 different friends right now whose parents are moving back in with them because they didn't plan these things right. They didn't take care of the plan. And it scares me when I really stop and think about, man, I don't want to do that to my children. I don't want to move back in. Now, if that's what God wants for us and our children are up for it, I get that. He's sovereign. But the point is, these are the kinds of things I can worry about. I'm vulnerable about the future, especially as it relates to, will I have enough? And I think a lot about that and worry a lot about that. So it's not only that we're vulnerable for ourselves, but we're also vulnerable about the ones we love. If you have children, you know exactly what I'm talking about. You worry about their health, right? You worry about their well-being. You worry about their future. I mean, are our kids ever going to be able to own a home from here on out, you know? That's crazy to me to think about how they're going to have to live, what's going to happen to them. And I'm so wrapped up in their future, about their well-being, about will they find someone to marry. It's amazing how many of our friends whose daughters are older and single, they can't find a good Christian guy, you know, if they had bait. It's just like they're difficult to find. And the dating scene is very, very unusual these days. And I get worried about that for our kids. I worry about what's kind of country are our kids going to inherit. And the thing is that the reason that we worry is that we realize just how vulnerable we really are. And we are. Because who we love and taking care of ourselves, there's some danger that's ahead of us that's possible. And it's easy to get sucked into that. Another reason that we can worry is not only because we're vulnerable about that, but also we can worry because actually it just comes out of nowhere. Sometimes, I don't know if you ever sat down and said, hey, let's plan on worrying about some things today. What should we plan on worrying about? Do you ever get these thoughts that are worries that just hit you out of the left field? Like all of a sudden you're like, wow. You start worrying, you start talking to somebody, thinking about something, and you start carrying it all the way down the road. And it's like, where did that come from? Maybe it came from the pit. Maybe there's somebody who's trying to get you out of the present, get you to doubt that God will care about you, that God knows what he's doing. That's where it's coming from. We worry because someone's trying to influence us to stop trusting God, to stop believing in him, to stop hoping in him. So in summary, we worry about the future because life is hard, because we are fragile and we're vulnerable, and there are people we love dearly that we're concerned about. And we want them to make it all the way. There's a second thing, not only why do we worry, but how is worrying about the future not good for us? Why is it that Jesus is concerned about that? Why does he command us not to worry about that? Now, I just want to make a distinction. There's a difference between worrying and planning. You know, some of us might be picking a little debate here and say, well, I'm not a worrier, I'm just a planner. I'm just planning for the future. I'm not worrying. Don't worry. Not sinning. I'm obeying. I'm not worrying. Just planning. So my friend Kirk is a pilot, private pilot. The difference between planning is that when he goes to fly, he checks everything out. He checks out all the instruments. He checks out the gas. He checks out the tires. He checks all that stuff. He thinks through worst-case scenarios, and he's got no emotion involved with that. He's not worried about it. He's not fearful about it. If that were me, I'd be checking the propeller going, this is going to come off. I know this is going to come off, you know. I'd be checking the wings. These wings are going to fall off. They're just going to completely fly apart. That's worrying. It's when you think the worst-case scenario that's going to happen, and when it's caught up in a sense of emotion and fear about that, that's no longer planning. You're now doubting that God will really take care of us. So planning and worrying are a little bit different. So Jesus tells us not to worry about the future for three reasons. First is because when we worry, we forget God. When we worry, we forget God. Matthew 25 through 33 that we're going to read at the end of this, he walks us through why we don't need to worry. We don't need to worry because God cares about us. He completely understands how fragile we are. He's a really, really good God. And Jesus gives us these great examples. If he can take care of these beautiful flowers, can't he take care of you? If he can feed the birds, can't he feed you? And what happens when we start to worry, we take our focus off of God. We put our focus on ourselves to figure out how to get through this. How to plan better, how to be smarter, how to... It's all about us. It's all in our flesh. And our flesh, when our mindset's on the flesh, it's hostile to God. And Jesus says, I don't want you to be into the future, into the flesh, and totally forgetting that God will take care of you. Stop worrying. He's going to take care of you. The second reason why he says that is because when we worry, we're disobeying God. See, this is a command. It's interesting that the form of the verb is not, you shouldn't really worry. You know, as best as you can, try not to. You shouldn't. I understand. It's like, don't worry. It's pretty clear. And it's a little, what's that? More than once, exactly. Six times in this, four other times in the New Testament. And the idea is, again, Jesus is commanding us. I want to unpack this here in a couple of moments. But we have to remember the reason why it's bad for us is because if we just kind of wallow in our fears and wallow in our worries and kind of keep playing them out, we are disobeying God. We're rehearsing how he's not going to take care of us. We're rehearsing, oh, he's that good. I got to take this on myself. I got to figure this all out myself. I got to take care of myself. Why? Because God's not going to take care of me. Because when our flesh is screaming to us through our fears that someone's got to take care of me, the flesh screams right back, well, you do because God won't. And so when we go against God's commands, when we worry, we are disobeying him. And we've got to learn to trust him how to handle these fears when they come about, not to nurse them and carry them along. You know, it's interesting. When I was in college, I started learning a lot about this because when I became a Christian, I needed to figure out some things, and anxiety, worry was certainly a big one of them. And when I began to understand that this was sin, it was really kind of weird because at first you're kind of going, well, I'm not trying to worry. These thoughts just come and hit me in the head. I didn't choose to worry. But what I began to realize is you're right. These things just hit me in the head, but what do I do with that thought when it hits me in the head? How do I handle that thought? What do I do with that thought? And the more I nurse it and nurse it and nurse it, the more I'm just going down this trail of saying, God, you're not going to take care of me. God, you're not good. It's all up to me. I got to figure everything out. And I have to learn over time to not do that, but still recognize this as sin. I remember in college, one of the things that was helpful for me, I had like just so much worry and anxiety. I said, you know what? I'm going to write all these things down. And I wrote out like two pages of worried thoughts, anxious things that were on my mind. I mean, it was amazing what came out of my head. These are all the things that I was worrying about. And what was interesting is that this is all the stuff that's going on in the background. This is all the stuff that's going on underneath the surface. These are the kinds of things that make it hard for me to be present with other people or even present with God. Why? Because I got all this stuff in the background that's floating. And when I put all these things down and I say, God, all of these things are sin because your word tells me not to worry, but to trust you. And here I'm trying to machinate my way all through this thing and get all these things figured out. So I wrote forgiven all across these things. I said, I'm going to confess these to you. I'm forgiven. And I want to put all these things in your hand and trust that you'll take care of me. And then for a little fun, I burned the list. You know, it's kind of fun to see it go up. There was a little gas on there, the whole house. No, I didn't put gas on it, no. But there was a sense in which I wanted to be clear and say, I don't want to do this. This is wrong. I want to turn from my anxiety and fear and learn to trust you. Because when we don't do that, we disobey him and hold on to the flesh. The third idea is that when we don't worry, in other words, why is worrying bad for us? Because when we worry, we believe two separate lies. When we give in to worrying, there's two lies that we accept. First is the lie that the future worry we have will actually happen. I don't know if you've ever had fears where as you begin to think about them and worry about them, do you ever start to get some emotion around it? Does it ever feel like it's real? Like it's actually going to happen? I remember when I was repairing this car, I had this dread about me that I was literally going to have to pay $4,000 to repair my transmission. And then if I did that, the car's not worth that much, and all these other side worries that start spinning off. And there was so much energy and so much anxiety in my heart over this, it pulled me right out of the present, right away from my kids, from Janet. I'm in a totally different spot. Because I was believing that this was actually true. What's interesting is Paul says in Philippians 4:8, he says, finally, brothers and sisters, whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is commendable, if there's any excellence and if anything worthy of praise, think about these things. He says, whatever is true. And when I start having these kinds of thoughts and fears, I start to think that they're actually going to happen. I really believe they're going to happen. And I start getting all that energy, that negative energy and worry, and I pull it right into the present. Because why? I'm attached. I'm stressed that way. And that's not true. What you're worrying about is not true, right? Because it's the future. You don't know if that's going to happen. How do you know that's going to happen? How do you know that what you're worried about is really going to happen? You can't know that, right? Because it's all in the future. And when we start to believe our fears and our worries, we're believing a lie. Because we have no way of knowing if that's ever going to happen. So we start believing it as if it's really true. We believe a lie. Does that make sense? Second thing that happens, or the second lie, is the lie that our worrying will improve our situation. That somehow if I worry this thing out, if I really think it through and do more planning, i.e. worrying, I'll be able to nail this thing. Now, it's one thing to anticipate problems if you're on the road. I get that. Again, there's a balance here. But when we kind of are so committed to our way of erasing fear and erasing worry, instead of bringing God into the process, we believe the lie that we can actually do something with our worry. That's what Jesus pointed out in this very passage, verse 27. And who of you being worried can add a single hour to his life? So when we start thinking that I can handle all these worries, that I've got what it takes, we believe this lie that I can actually be powerful enough to change the future. You know what? If I do this right, I don't need God. If I anticipate anything right, if I plan all these things out right, I don't need God. And that's a lie. We do need God. So we've looked at the idea of why do we worry? We're vulnerable. Why should we not be worrying? Because it means we forget about God. It means that we disobey God. And it also means that we believe lies that we shouldn't believe. There's a third question I had, and that is, what is the antidote to worrying about the future? Well, Jesus tells a couple of things very clearly. The first step we need to do is stay out of the future. It's none of your business. It's none of your business. That's what he's saying. It's none of your business. You can't read the future. You can't tell the future. So what business do you have living in the future? It's not your business. Stay out of the future. Here's a couple of things that I hope will help. One is stop the spiraling. Okay? When a plane is kind of losing its way and starts to go out of control, it starts spinning, right? And a pilot needs to grab a hold of the controls and steady things out. The pilot has to make a choice. You can't just let things keep spinning forever. You got to get control of the aircraft. And you and I have the ability to think. We have the ability to stop thinking. And we've got to get control of all these thoughts that are spinning out of control. Just like as a young man when I was in college, became a Christian when I was freshman year in college, went to Arizona State University, where all the women wore very little clothing. And as a young man, I had to figure out how to walk with Christ in this environment, and I'd get thoughts that I don't want in my head. So I just say, well, what can I do about it? I had to take charge. I had to say, I'm not going to think about that. I'm not going to think about that. I had to create discipline mentally. So what do we do to stop or stay out of the future? Stop the spiraling. Get control of what you think about. Make choices. Paul said in 2 Corinthians 10:5, take every thought captive to the obedience of Christ. That when you start to see these things and these worries spiral out of control, stop it. Stop it. Tell yourself, no, that's not the truth. That's what I keep telling myself about this car situation. It was Saturday, Sunday. Well, I'm going to go and check in the dealership. I bet it's a broken car. Stop it. Stop thinking about that. Stop thinking about it. Do not think about tomorrow. Call them tomorrow, but stop thinking about it. So take some control and ask God to help you to stop thinking. Ask His Spirit to help you to stop thinking. And if you're like me, if you're a little OCD like me, it's going to take a lot of energy. Because I can't just stop it once or twice. I've got to keep after it because my mind wants to keep spinning and keep spinning and keep spinning. And guess what? The devil wants to keep getting me to doubt, to keep doubting God. So he's going to keep pushing me to stay in the future. That's why I got to keep learning to stop and take those thoughts captive. Another thing is to tell the Lord what's scaring you. Just be honest with him. Write out your list. What's your worried list? What are you worried about? What's weighing your heart down? Don't let it just operate in the background because it'll just keep poking its way into the foreground. Write down everything that you're anxious about. Put it before the Lord. Write it down. Make your worry list. Peter says, cast all your anxiety on him because he cares for you. And as you do that, just give it to him. That will help you stay out of the future. Next is confess your anxiety as sin and know that it's been forgiven. Just like I did. When you put all this stuff down, say, Lord, this isn't right. This isn't pleasing to you. I want to confess all these worries as sin because I am trying to manage everything thinking I can manage everything. And I don't know the future, God. You do. So forgive me for trying to pretend like I can do this on my own. Confess that to him. You can burn the list if you want. You don't have to, but it's kind of fun for me. I mean, lighting stuff on fire, come on, that's just fun. I'm sorry, maybe just for me it is, okay? So what do? We stay out of the future. Stay out of the future. The second thing we do is what Jesus said, is to stay in the present. Stay right here. There's enough going on right here. Matter of fact, Debbie's going to help me here. I want to read a quote from C.S. Lewis here. And like C.S. Lewis, it's a little long, a little heady. I've broken it into some paragraphs. If you kind of go, huh, I'll try to summarize it because he's like that. But look at what he says. This is from the book, The Screwtape Letters. And it's a conversation, an imaginary conversation between two demons. An older demon teaching a younger demon how to get his patient, who is the Christian. Now, as we read this, we get it worked around. The enemy is God because it's from Satan's perspective. So when he talks about the enemy, he's talking about God because God is Satan's enemy. He says to his young protege, the humans live in time, but our enemy destines them to eternity. He, therefore, I believe, wants them to attend chiefly to two things, to eternity itself and to that point of time which they call the present. For the present is the point at which time touches eternity. Of the present moment and of it only, humans have an experience analogous to the experience which our enemy has of reality as a whole. In it alone, freedom and actuality are offered them. He would, therefore, have them continually concerned either with eternity, which means being concerned with him, or with the present, either meditating on their eternal union with or separation from himself, or else obeying the present voice of conscience, bearing the present cross, receiving the present grace, giving thanks for the present pleasure. Our business is to get them away from the eternal and from the present. With this in view, we sometimes tempt a human, say a widow or a scholar, to live in the past. But this, be quiet, I'm speaking. There we go. But this is of limited value, for they have some real knowledge of the past, and it has a determinate nature, and to that extent resembles eternity. It is far better to make them live in the future. Biological necessity makes all their passions point in that direction already, so that thought about the future inflames hope and fear. Also, it is unknown to them, so that in making them think about it, we make them think of unrealities. In a word, the future is of all things the least like eternity. It is the most completely temporal part of time, for the past is frozen and no longer flows, and the present is all lit up with eternal rays. You see, Satan wants us to stay out of the present because that's where God is. God is right here, right now. And God can only minister to us right here and right now. I remember when I was in college, I was struggling with something, and a dear friend of mine, Matt Neal, his mom, said, "Ben, God is not going to give you grace for the future. He's only going to give you grace for today." So live in the present. Walk with Christ right here and right now. So as we stay in the present, another thing that helps us is to rehearse God's goodness and care each day. That's what this whole passage was about. This idea that God cares about us. I'm running out of time. I want to refer you to read this on your own. But you remember the passage. Jesus says, "Aren't you worth more than these? Don't you think your Heavenly Father loves you and cares about you? Do you not think that he's going to take care of you? He knows exactly what you need before you even say it. He cares deeply about you." See, the verse we're reading is a conclusion. It says, "Therefore, do not worry about tomorrow, because tomorrow will take care of itself, because each day has enough trouble of its own." That's Jesus' conclusion. Because as we reflect on his goodness, that he's sovereign, he knows everything that's going to happen to you and me. He knows the year, the month, the day, the hour, the minute, the second that I will take my last breath. And until he does, I can trust him. I can hold on to that. I don't have to get into the future. I can walk with him right now. So rehearse the truth of God each day. Stay each day. Rehearse that and remember that. There's a guy by the name of Bill Wilson who struggled with alcohol. And he tried to get clean and sober 4 times, and it just wasn't taken. And there's a guy that he knew in this Oxford Christian group that would talk to him and share Christ with him and said, "Bill, you need God's help." And Bill wasn't really a religious guy, but he knew he needed help. And one night had this experience where he saw this bright shining light and basically came to Christ and realized the only way that he's going to get help from drinking is from God's help. And as he did that, he stayed sober ever since that moment. I think it's close to 40 years that he stayed sober. He went on to start a group called Alcoholics Anonymous. George is deeply aware of that group and all that's happening. By the way, I've been praying for Tyler for the last 2 months, so I want to talk to you afterwards. So, anyway, but what was interesting is Bill was trying to help these people struggle with their alcoholism. He came up with this concept. He actually ripped Jesus off. Do you know the concept that he came up with that helped alcoholics? How did he teach them to live? One day at a time. Because he knew that these struggling alcoholics, the more they try to race to the future and figure everything out, it's only going to create more stress. And when you feel more stress, you want to relieve stress. And when you want to relieve stress, you want to drink. So guys, stay out of the future. Live one day at a time. And that's what Jesus is telling us. Stay right here. You may not know what the future holds, but you know who holds the future. Cling to him. Let me pray for us. Oh, Lord Jesus, thank you so much that you are so mindful of how frail we are, how vulnerable we are, how prone we are to try to figure out the future and control the pain that we fear. And you know, we can't do it as much as we try. So we confess to you just this anxiety that we feel, that when our hearts turn immediately to ourselves instead of to you. Thank you that you've forgiven us our sin of worrying and taking matters into our own hands. Will you help us to live each day, moment by moment, day by day, one day at a time, remembering your goodness and your care, your love, your knowledge, your awareness of our life. And as we do that, would you just be real? And by being with you each day, we won't really care about the future because we'll have such rich moments with you today. Will you help us grow that way, day by day, choice by choice? In Jesus' name, amen.